Welcome to the Minivate Gang Podcast, episode 223. I'm Steve Borsch. Yes, we're back, and I'm with Tim Elliott.
And it's raining here in Lakeville.
It is. Phil Wilson.
Good morning.
And Graham Thickens is up north at his cabin, but he's not feeling well today, so he's going to just probably...
Tied one on last night.
Probably. He probably did tie one on, yeah. He's out hanging on the boat. So, right. Anyway...
Half a case of beer, probably, something like that.
That's right. So we took a little time off. I went on a 3,200-mile, 9-day Steve Quest, yes.
How many flat tires did you get?
None. In fact, I averaged 48.7 miles to the gallon, which was good because gas out there was like $4 a gallon. But I went through Montana, Wyoming, Idaho, Utah. It was awesome.
Nice.
Just awesome. Anyway.
Nice.
And then we took the 4th of July weekend off, and now we're back working hard again, bringing the top stories, the top tech stories to our listeners.
Wow.
At least the stuff that we want to talk about. Let's just
Exactly.
Yeah.
Not the most important ones.
Well, let's not confuse anybody with the concept that we're really that newsy. So
there's some stuff that went on though.
Yeah,
there are some things that went on. And, probably, you know, we should probably stay close to, you know, what's happened in the last week. And we were chatting a little bit before we hopped on here about the Twin Cities Kickstarter for nonprofits, which is, what's it called, Tim?
Barnraisings.com.
Barnraisings.com.
Just launched. Yeah.
They have a favicon that looks like a cow.
Moo.
So that's really important. But I love the kickstarting concept.
Because, the crowdfunding. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I mean, it's like everybody's voting. They're voting with their pocketbooks. And exactly. how'd you come across this, Tim?
I think there was a Business Journal piece on this earlier.
Yeah.
Okay. It was.
There was.
Yeah. It was like last week sometime. And it's. You know, it's a really interesting, concept here of crowdfunding nonprofit projects,
which is interesting. It does. It's not like we talked about the similarities of GiveMN, and GiveMN is giving to an organization, and Barn Raisings is based on projects within 501c organizations. So
right. So it puts a face on it.
Yeah. Brings a personal touch to it, a little bit less organization, more person focused. And, I'll just read the Why This Rocks, which is their, what we're all about on their homepage. Sometimes you want to help a specific person, not just an organization. Pick a story that speaks to you. Give the gift of not just your money, but your time, which is another interesting piece.
That is.
Yeah. Either from the start to finish, get to know the people you're helping. It's all here. So you can volunteer time. You can fund. You can provide money. They have about 11 projects cooking right now. The name derives from the concept of the Amish community that will get together and help raise a barn for, a member of the community. And it becomes sort of a community event. And so hence the name Barn Raisings. I think this is... The more I look at it, the more I like this.
Yeah, it's a great concept.
It is. I hope that they really grow and they're able to expand outside of the area. This is just in the Twin Cities right now.
Right, right. And I think it just went live this week.
Yeah, it's really kind of sparse, but I like the design. The design is very forward. It looks sort of like Pinterest, sort of.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and it's done in WordPress. There's
really?
How do you
know that?
Well, there's a plugin called Built With for Chrome, you can see what something is built with, what underlying technologies are using.
You know everything.
Well, I'm nosy.
He is nosy.
He is nosy.
Hey, whoever built this, they have a standard WordPress login page.
Uh-oh.
I mean, it's not a big deal.
No, I know.
Yeah. You could at least, they have a nice logo. You could stick that nice logo there on the login page. Just saying.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely.
Takes you like 4 minutes to write the code for that. It's not bad. Not bad at all.
Listen to you guys.
But this looks great. I like it.
Yep.
It's very nice.
Very nicely done. Well, and we need stuff like this because there's more and more well, there's more need out there, but also there are so many things that need to get funded that are not on anybody's particular radar screen. So that's a big deal. Well, this next story.
Yeah. Speaking of crowdfunding.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, I love Fast Company. Fast Company publishes anywhere from 40 to 50 articles every day. I mean, it's just like, oh my God, I mean, how many writers do they have? But this whole thing about Fast Company and Target announcing the winner of the Collabs and Target Retail Accelerator project, Target is really trying to get close to the cutting edge of development, aren't they?
Yeah, they've started up a Silicon Valley office, mm-hmm. and they're trying to really get close to entrepreneurs, especially those that do mobile apps. And this is one of the things that they're trying to kickstart, sort of, is that and the, you know, this Fast Company thing was a way for them to get a lot of free publicity about what they're doing.
Right.
And you know, that I'm sure that they will continue to have these sorts of contests in the future for, you know, to get these ideas from these you know, these mobile app folks. So it would have been better had there been a Minnesota tie-in to Divi, which is the group that won, but there's not.
Yeah, well, you know, obviously Target doesn't care where it comes from,
right?
You know, as long as it appears. But yeah, there is we'll also put a link in the show notes to the finalists, and then you can go and click the links and go out and look at them. And there's a lot of really interesting concepts, not just the one that won. So, you know, we encourage you to go out and take a look at that. And clearly Target is trying to take it up to the next level.
Yeah. Have you guys been into a Target recently where you've used their Wi-Fi and that new app? What is it called? Starts with a C. I guess not.
No.
I don't know.
I haven't.
Chrome?
No. It's gosh darn it. What is that app? I just used it the other day. Target mobile app. And we talked about it on the show, like, I don't know, 6 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Something like that. I don't know. It'll come to mind.
Yeah. But, well, then stick it in the show notes. But
yeah. But anyway, but you use this app on their Wi-Fi, and they're able to push down, you know, deals, and they can of course track you in the store. And all
right.
Right. So it's good. I mean, it's they're making lots of moves there.
Yeah. I'm not sure I want to just say, you know, here I am every time I walk in. Now you're going to know where I am. And,
are you talking about Cartwheel, by the way?
Cartwheel. That's it.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Okay.
It's a really good app, but Cartwheel, you should do it, even though, you know, they'll take all your information and run you through the big data computer, and they'll, you know, they'll
triangulate your retail experiences. Right.
And the next thing you know, you'll have some, you know, some discounts on products that you probably don't want to, you know, people to know that you actually buy.
Right. Right.
You know, those for seasoned citizens like us.
Yep. Well, this next set of stories or portions, concern a company that used to be on a death watch, and it's no longer on a death watch, is it, Tim?
Oh, that doesn't seem to be. Best Buy has really kind of bounced back.
They have. I love the article, Best Buy defeats showrooming and is having a renaissance.
Yeah, but it's you know, if you read that article, it's a very nice intro, but it really kind of paints a gloom and doom picture for Best Buy.
It very much talks
about, you know, Best Buy is, a lot of this is very much, you know, short term, as you have to look at any turnaround is going to be perceived as short term, at least to begin with, because you've got to start somewhere.
Yeah, you got to get the machete out and start hacking, and then start investing.
You know, if you talk about the long term, if you look at what Best Buy is doing now and then look at the long term, yeah, it doesn't necessarily bode well for big box stores. I mean, they're finding success with their mobile Best Buy mobile sites, which are much smaller floor space tours that specialize in certain things. They're spent, you know, I just don't see them staying in these huge facilities. There's just no way to keep doing that. They're concentrating more on smaller segments of the market. And I just don't think you need the huge barns that they have to hold all that. So that means fewer people working eventually and fewer hunks of real estate, I would imagine. No?
Well, yeah, I would say, no, I don't actually. And in fact, this is going to sound like a bizarre analogy for a business model, but look at what McDonald's did when they reached a point of store saturation in the United States is they began doing small concepts. So they had the small McDonald's that were in airports and malls and other, you know, they have a more limited menu because they didn't have a kitchen the same size. But they began,
which I think is good. I mean, the one thing that has always disappointed me about the fast food model in the U.S. is they've decided to stop being fast food. And that just drives me crazy because that, you know, that everything is now slower. You go to those places, not because the cuisine is so great. You go there because it's quick.
Yeah,
and it's just not cheap. As quick as it, and cheap, and it's not quick and cheap anymore.
Right, but that's the, you know, the Best Buy mobile strategy, I think, is really brilliant. You know, to have a place where it's totally focused on mobile, and that's it. You know,
and if we, and
there
if we
aren't continue, washers and dryers and vacuums and everything else,
and if we see the continuing deterioration of the PC market moves into tablets and more portable devices, tablets, laptops, et cetera. You know, I mean, what's to stop them from rolling those into smaller stores like the mobile spaces? And then all of a sudden, well, I guess we don't really need a big honking store anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, by the way, isn't it a frightening story if you were Microsoft about the PC business?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
That's okay. That's all right. They're going to turn it around. They're restructuring, you know?
That's right.
Yeah. But oh my God.
Yeah, that's, Steve, don't worry. Steve Ballmer's got this.
He's got it nailed.
yeah. Don't think so. But are you excited to see that the Pebble is going to be at Best Buy now, Phil?
Oh, no. You know, I'm not excited. I have a Pebble. I'm not really excited, no. But then again, there's going to be a whole lot of smartwatches showing up
at devices. Stores.
You know, it's nice that Pebble is the first, but there's more to come, I'm sure.
Well, one of the things that we watch for our home furnishings trend business is what's happening in materials. Because, you know, that's what designers are looking at. And they're saying, hey, you know, that would be cool to use for a fabric for a sofa. And we also watch the fashion industry, even though we're not experts in fashion, with respect to, you know, what's happening in materials and so on and so forth. So it's really fascinating to see what's happening with graphene, which is a, you know, a lattice of atom-sized carbon that can be conducting electricity or signal, and all the stuff that's happening in that realm. And no, I forgot where I was. Oh, the place I was going was wearable computing and the kinds of concepts that are beginning to be floated with respect to, you know, smart objects and like the Pebble watch, but also things that you wear that sense your environment and send information to your watch or to your phone now is what the concepts are. But that more and more of our stuff are going to be connected. And this whole Internet of Things, it's been interesting because some people are talking about the Internet of You, and it's about all the stuff that's connected to you and that you're connected to. And it could be your jacket, or it could be your shoes with the Nike sensor in it, or it could be your Pebble watch. And I think that's kind of interesting. It's going to be a fun space to watch.
Yeah, it is going to be. It's going to be a very interesting space to watch. You know, we'll see what happens.
Are you looking at your Pebble watch right now?
Yes, I am. I am watching.
So, Steve, are you working on a new startup for this space, this Internet of You? Like. Smart band for wristwatches and
I'm unable to speak about it.
It's a smart band is like a integrated hub for your Internet of You. That's actually looks like a watch band. How's that?
That's a great idea.
Maybe the Smart Things guys will rip that off.
They could. They could. Well, we'll see.
Yeah, probably not. Probably a stupid idea, but, you know.
Yeah.
No, it's not a stupid idea. Not a stupid idea at all.
The internet of you. I mean, come on.
Well, I mean, you know what? What if you can walk around, you can be your own hotspot, and people can connect with you?
Yeah, that's bad.
Didn't they try that at South by Southwest with homeless people?
Yeah. Oh, that's right. I remember that. Yeah.
Internet.
God.
Be your own hotspot.
Be your own hotspot. Yeah.
Oh, man.
Hey, if you got an old iPad, though, you can bring it into Best Buy this weekend for at least $200.
Is that what really? It is? At least 200?
Yes. iPad 2 or 3. So Phil, you got an iPad 2?
I got an iPad 2. What? But I use my iPad 2. Why would I get $200?
Because you'd upgrade.
Well, then you could upgrade to an iPad mini.
Oh. Nah, no need.
Well, okay. So I had my iPad when I was on my 3,200-mile adventure. And it went face forward onto the desk, and I picked it up, and it was cracked all over the face of the thing. It's like, are you serious? Well, I bought AppleCare Plus on it, so I had my little 128 gig MacBook Air, so I had to go to a Best Buy, buy a 500 gig drive, back up my iTunes folder so I could back up my 64 gig iPad onto iTunes. Then I erased it, and I had a Genius appointment, and I went to the Genius appointment, and they just replaced it for $49. So I was like, whew. So nice. That was good. So nice. I asked him, though, hey, can I upgrade to the new one? Can I pay you guys a little more money and get the? He goes, no, we don't do that. So it's like, shit.
So what did it cost you?
$49. You get two incidents. Nice. During the life of the AppleCare Plus. And it's, you know, for me with mobile devices, it's totally worth it. You know, because the chances of me doing exactly what happened, you know, just something stupid. I'm extremely careful with my devices, but still. You know, it definitely.
It happens.
It does happen.
It happens.
And Best Buy, actually, I should put in a little plug because my daughter is at the Best Buy Mobile in Burnsville. Mm-hmm. Best Buy's replacement policy is actually better than Apple's. And so I'm going to seriously consider doing that with the next iPhone I get. Is do theirs instead of Apple's.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. It's much better.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
Well, that's how they're defeating showrooming right there.
Well, that's one way. So.
Nice.
Yep.
Explain that again. Say that again. You get, if you go with the Best Buy mobile coverage, you get what?
Well, I'm looking it up right now.
Okay.
Let's see. The Best Buy one is $239 for AppleCare, or for their plan, and AppleCare is $119, so it's more expensive, but then you have an unlimited number of breakages. So if you drop in your toilet every other week.
And do you have to, is there a deductible that goes with that too?
No.
Well, so that's not a bad deal.
It's not a bad deal. So you pay more up front, but so if you have issues, yeah.
Like me.
Yep.
You can do that.
Right. Well, and you know what? It makes sense. Normally, I'm not a fan of insurance because when I was a manufacturer's rep years and years and years ago, we sold a wholesale insurance policy from a company called Warrant Tech, and we sold it to Sound of Music and Audio King and some of these retailers you probably never even heard of, Phil.
Oh, I've heard of them. I've heard of them, but. I don't think most of our
listeners. Yes. Well, back in the day,
when I went to World Radio.
But it was so funny because it was, you know, you looked at the fact that the more attach rates you could do, the more profitable it was for the retailer. Because the percentage of claims was so low in comparison that just didn't make sense. But anyway, this with mobile devices, I think it's just, especially with the cost of them, because if you crush your HTC One, if you wanted to go buy one outright without a subsidy, how much would it cost you? Do you know?
Wouldn't it be $500 or $600?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Something like that.
Something like that. And same thing, like I got a 64 gig iPhone 4S that I'm waiting for the next iPhone to come out. If I crush that and had to buy a new one outright, it would be, I think it's $700 for a 64 gig, if I can even get one. So yeah, it's definitely spendy.
Yeah. I broke my Nexus 4, but I got it replaced.
How did you break your Nexus 4?
I think it was I talked them into it that it was a defect, because I've only had it for like 5 weeks.
Uh-huh.
And it started to develop a crack on the upper left-hand side on the screen.
It just started to develop a crack?
Yeah, I didn't do anything. I didn't drop it. I didn't really do anything that I was, you know, carried in a pocket like I normally do phones. So yeah, a little crack. And so I called them up and then said, this is like a defect. So long story short, they sent me another one. They didn't charge me the deductible.
Nice.
You know, blah, blah, blah. They sent me a new one. It works. Sent back the old one.
Huh. Well, I'm trying to convince a local retailer here that they keep selling me defective lottery tickets, but it hasn't worked. So I keep telling them the damn thing didn't work. I want my money back or give me another ticket for free. But
that's not how it works, Steve.
I'm sorry.
Oh, it's not? Oh,
Steve is a subtly funny man.
I know. I mean, that.
I know. Or as my kids would say, shut up, Dad. That's not funny at all.
He's no Bob Newhart, though.
Yeah. He is no Bob. Well, the mobile app space.
Who put this in? I hadn't heard about this.
Commerce. I hadn't even heard of Finance and Commerce, the magazine, or actually the website. But
I've been interviewed twice for Finance and Commerce.
You have?
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Well, it's behind a paywall, so you can't get to it.
I put it in because a friend of the show, Aaron Cardell, was mentioned.
Yeah. Realty apps. And, he is just a fast growing little company. And so they talked about the popularity of mobile realty apps. And as Aaron points out in this article, he started this bad boy in 2009. And you think back to 2009 when the real estate business was in the
tank. Yeah.
It was just awful. Yep. That was really a leap of faith for him. And I remember seeing one of his first realty apps and just going, wow, this thing is great. And I know there's more than a few people out there that are, using the MLS to generate mobile applications. But still, Aaron's is, I think, just a brilliant piece of technology.
Well, and having one for the commercial side, mm-hmm. Nobody's really done that. They talk a little bit in here about
CoStar
other alternatives.
CoStar doing the commercial side of realty. I don't know. Is Aaron doing, I don't think Aaron's doing anything on the commercial side himself, but he's focusing on the residential real estate market. And what's really nice is he's building these branded apps for, real estate agents themselves and companies, mm-hmm. which I think is a stroke of genius for any realtor that really wants to augment their services. That sort of application is brilliant.
Yep. So he did that. So Aaron did the Edina Realty app. What else did he do?
Oh, he's got a bunch out there that are just, he's done them for Remax. He brands them, but the app itself is called HomeSpotter.
Oh, okay. Okay. Got it.
And that company is growing. He moved into a bigger space in the Grand Exchange building. He was originally in Cocoa, but moved downstairs into his own space in the Grand Exchange building. He's been on a bit of a hiring tear, and he's doing very well.
Well, and there's nothing, wonderful. I mean, there's nothing better than to be looking looking for property, being in the realty space and having something where it's with you all the time. Mm-hmm. And I can't tell you how many times I've been in a neighborhood and I've thought, geez, I wonder how much homes are. So here I am in Park City, Utah, and I'm, where the Sundance Film Festival is held and they've got the ski resorts, and I'm driving along looking at these little teeny houses that are right next to each other. And I pulled up Zillow just to see what property is costing around me. And, you know, like the cheapest house I could find was 700K. And I thought, my God, it's like 1,200 square feet. Anyway.
It's not cheap for you to continue to stock Marie Osmond.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I love Marie.
That's because you're a little country and she's a little bit rock.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Somehow I don't think, you know, let's not even go there. What am I, what the hell are we talking about Marie Osmond for? Thanks, Phil.
I do my best. You said Utah. I thought Marie. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, actually, you know, they built a studio because I was reading stuff when I was there, when I was in the Salt Lake City area.
Yeah.
And
you were reading? Get out.
Yeah. Well, I love reading about spaces and places when I'm there. And the one thing that I didn't do that I kicked myself for is I didn't drive down to see the new NSA facility, that $2.5 billion facility, and see if I could at least get close to it.
I don't think you can actually see it. I think it's stealth.
Yeah.
Oh, is it? So it's okay. So it's like Area 51. They kind of hide those alien craft.
Right.
In the mountainside. Yeah. Okay. Got it.
Right. If you got close enough to see it, they would arrest you.
They'd shoot me. Yeah. Yeah.
You'd find yourself in a transit lounge in Moscow, I think.
Yeah, I was going to say, they put you in the Snowden lounge.
The Snowden lounge. Oh, God. Well, anyway, so they had built, you know, when they were taken off, they built a studio for the Donnie and Marie show. And, of course, when the Donnie and Marie show ended, they were just sitting there with all this debt. They had to dump it, but... So if we ever get wildly successful, let's not build a big Minovate Gang studio. Okay.
Don't tell that. Don't tell that to Leo Laporte.
Oh God, that's right. Well, he didn't put much money into it. Plus he doesn't own the building. He's just renting.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. So
Tim, you're still on T-Mobile, aren't you?
I am.
You're pretty excited about LTE in the Twin Cities then.
Yeah. And are you experiencing it yet?
Oh no. Cause my phone doesn't have LTE.
Oh, okay.
Oh, but, that's right. The Nexus 4 doesn't have that.
It doesn't, but also at the bottom of this story that Julio, this is Julio Ojeda Zapata's blog post, they have a new program, which is only like, I get the extended coverage on my phone in case the screen cracks and they send me another one. So they have a new plan called Jump that's $10 a month that it allows you to upgrade your phone twice a year.
Wow. Yeah. I read about that.
$7.99 just for the protection on the handset. So I think I'm going to upgrade to this and then I can get, you know, an LTE, HTC One or whatever the next version is, and start using LTE.
That's a great idea. Well, so, plus talk about a great way to keep you in the fold, keep you in the family. Why would you leave T-Mobile? It's a crazy idea.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully I'm assuming they're thinking they're going to be able to flip the used phones pretty quickly.
Yeah, no, they do a large business in refurbished phones. So.
Okay.
Yeah. So anyway, Julio says the speed isn't as good as the other competitors, but you know, I don't know what, you know, when you get up to 30, 40 megabits on a phone, that's plenty fast.
True. Well, you know,
fast do you really need on a phone?
Right. Well, when I was in Wyoming,
it all comes back to this trip, doesn't it?
Everything does, because it's on my mind. but when I was there, which was awesome. Again, if anyone wants to see maybe I should put a link to my Flickr photos.
Yeah.
Anybody care? Does anybody
no, care? I do, but maybe listeners don't.
There you go. So when I left the Salt Lake City area and I was cutting through Wyoming, I was going to stay in Cheyenne. I was really upset because I had in several places had 4, sometimes 5 bars on AT&T, and it said 4G, and I had 0 data. I couldn't get any data, couldn't send and receive. The only thing I could do is make voice calls and also do messaging. And so I ended up calling 611 to talk to an AT&T person. And so as we're going along, the guy says, so where are you? And I said, I'm somewhere between Rock Springs and Rollins. And he said, well, actually, you shouldn't have any coverage at all. I said, what? And he goes, no, actually, right where you are, we don't have any towers. And I said, well, how can you and I be talking then? He goes, well, you must be using somebody else's towers. Yeah, like, you know, because they have reciprocity. So do you think it's probably T-Mobile?
Okay. It has to be, because they're the only other GSM carrier with AT&T that they have that reciprocity.
Okay. Yeah, well, I'm wondering, though, why then was I unable to do anything with data? Do they not have data reciprocity?
No, because the data frequencies are different.
Oh, God.
And that's why when you have an iPhone on T-Mobile, the old ones, the AT&T iPhones, yep, they only works with Edge.
Interesting.
I've had that problem with the HTC and on Sprint is in places like South Dakota. I mean, I was in Sioux Falls 2 weeks ago, and there were spots in Sioux Falls where data simply would not work.
Just interesting. Work. Okay.
You know, it's interesting because I have the HTC One, so I've noticed on occasion now my 4G is active. Now, as far as I know, the HTC One does not pick up the WiMAX signal. Am I right on that, Tim?
I'm pretty sure it just has LTE radios in it.
So it must be picking up some, you know, the start of some LTE work here in the Twin Cities area. So.
Yeah, I'm sure. Well, every carrier, they light up an area and they test it, you know, for a period of time. So it's very likely that they're putting it in the Twin Cities and you're seeing it every once in a while.
It's not a powerful signal, especially here in Lakeville, but it does pop here in Lakeville.
Oh, interesting.
Well, that's good because there are
some towers on the southern side of the city.
They're late in the game, but they're coming at you.
Yeah, baby. They're coming at you.
You're going to get that 4G data.
Woohoo. Woohoo.
Well, all I care about is I want the entire world to be in reciprocity. My wife is going to Australia on Sunday. She'll be there 10 days. And so we're going to have to unlock a phone and she'll have to buy a SIM card while she's there. And it's just, I mean, honest to God, it's like you need a computer science degree to be able to get it to work and pull it all together.
And thank God you have one.
No, but I'm being serious though.
Well, she's going to use an iPhone though, right?
Yeah, she's going to use an older iPhone. She had to replace her iPhone with she got a new iPhone 5, and so she's got a 4, and we'll just unlock that and get her a SIM card.
Yeah, the iPhones, I found that when you do the unlocking and all that, it's much easier to get them working on foreign networks.
Okay. Yeah,
so it's not
you did that with one, didn't you?
Yeah, I did it on an Android phone, though.
So. Okay. Well, I did one for an iPhone when my daughter went to Mexico, and we bought a SIM card here and $30, and then I put $50 worth of time in it, or voice and data, so that worked pretty well, but... But the whole thing, it's such an unbelievably difficult adventure that it's just not fun. And boy, it sure'd be nice if it was simple.
Well, it's not.
It's not. Just stay home.
So just deal with it.
Yeah, just stay home.
All right.
Turn your phone off.
All right.
Go back to using payphones, Steve.
Yeah. Well, yeah, actually, I did an Instagram picture, which has been my most favorited picture, and it was a picture of a phone, like a little phone housing outside a mall building, and the phone was gone. And my comment was, oh my God, somebody stole a phone. What if there's an emergency? And, it's like, geez, you can't find payphones anymore.
You see, that's that subtle Steve Borsch humor. Did you get that? Did you feel that, everybody?
Okay, let's move on. Before I get any more crap from Phil Wilson. So PC World is getting out of print. What the hell? What are they, nuts?
They're the last major.
The holdout.
Yeah. So it's pretty much over for technology magazines in print now.
Wow.
At least here in the U.S.
You remember how thick that used to be, PC World?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I haven't read PC World in a long time, but I just went to the... Dakota County Library and got the latest issue, which is their their final issue in print, but I got it the digital version.
Yeah, I was going to say, did you get it? Get a version of it, put it in a plastic sleeve to save it?
No. I read PC Magazine and have for years, and they made the switch to digital. I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago, something like that, 3 or 4 years ago, whatever it was. So I've been reading their digital edition on my tablet for a while now, but you know, PC world, but I just put it in there end of an era, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know? Well, you know, it's interesting because Ad Age, reported, in late June that advertising in iPad magazines was up nearly 24% in the first quarter of 2013. And apparently, I read another article. I'll see if I can find it, put in the show notes about, tablet magazines overall increasing subscriptions dramatically in 2013. So maybe the transition has already occurred. Do you think?
Maybe. Could be.
So maybe we should have an iPad app?
Absolutely.
I know of a company that would be glad to build one for you.
There you go.
Really? Well, you'd probably
for
get
free?
A discount. Probably get a discount. Right?
We'll give you free advertising.
Okay. No. I think an Innovate app would be great.
Yeah.
It would be a streaming app so you could just listen to this podcast over and over and over again. Because we know a lot of people do that.
Yep.
Not much.
Well, and the other big news.
What other big news is that, sir?
Microsoft's reorg.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, I got to tell you, I barely paid any attention to this. So who can give a recap?
I didn't either, but
Mr. Elliott.
Yeah. The problem with Microsoft is that like a lot of technology companies, it sort of, it grew too fast for the organization build out, and they've really haven't, you know, they really haven't centralized, you know, and tried to organize Microsoft the way that a normal, you know, very large company like they are would. So they have these little fiefdoms here and there. So, and they've had this for years, and it's always been a problem where you see, you know, they have like two cloud storage things. So they had SkyDrive and then they had something else. I forgot the name of it, right? So they
Azure.
All this duplication of stuff. And the reason they have that is because they've got these little fiefdoms around. So this reorg is to try to do that, to try to break that down and to try to more centralize the company. But the link that I put in is of the memos announcing this internally from allegedly from Steve Ballmer. So it's a memo and then it's a
email.
It's an email.
Yep.
And it, obviously Steve Ballmer did not write either of these. He may have been involved in sort of the high reaching things, but this is like corporate PR bullshit at a very, very high level.
Very much so.
Yeah.
If you actually read through it, there's very little information in there.
I know. Just the
there's
beginning
just very,
of it.
Very little information.
Okay. So the beginning of it, the first line, as the times change, so must our company. I mean, how ridiculously cliche is that? That is like stupid. I mean, come on. You know?
So anyway,
it's entertaining reading if you're in the communication business as some of us are.
It's kind of like the launch of so many of their products lately. They're not quite done yet. So they put on a big PR show to say, oh, it's coming. It's going to do this. It's coming.
Yeah.
And it's the same sort of thing.
Windows 8 has, as I predicted on this show, I think months or years ago, has been disappointing.
Right? Yes. Right.
I said it would be a disaster, and I think it time will tell, but it will be a disaster. But it's been very disappointing is
bad enough for Microsoft.
Right. And then their tablet strategy is a disaster. I mean, that whole RT thing, that's not good. So, you know, I'm not sure if this reorg is going to help get them back on track or not, but hopefully it will. We'll see.
Well, they've got to do something.
The beginning of the end.
They've got to do something because, you know, I'll tell you, out of all of the couple thousand articles that I troll every day that I skim through in the tech space, Microsoft is just, they're not even an asterisk in these articles. I mean, it's like nobody talks about them at all. It's just amazing.
They're still a huge enterprise company.
No question.
I mean,
no
they're question. Making lots of money.
I know. It's a huge enterprise
company. Yeah.
I know.
So don't count them out.
I'm not counting them out. I'm just saying there's an issue with relevancy.
Oh, in the consumer space, absolutely. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. So, you know, we couldn't, I mean, being gone 2 weeks.
I know. And I'm sorry. I had
to. That we couldn't get through.
Come on, Phil.
We couldn't go 3 weeks without saying something about Apple. So,
but I put this in only because
pictures of the new cheap iPhone.
I know, but I only put this in because the
budget iPhone.
The twist on the story is so bizarre. It has to be commented on. So this is a company that's selling an Android knockoff of the purported new cheap iPhone before the new cheap iPhone comes out.
Right.
And that's what they're basing the story on. It's some Android knockoff called the Basic Bear.
The Basic Bear.
Yes. The Basic Bear.
And you could also get an HTC One knockoff as well.
And it only costs $199, unsubsidized, the Basic Bear.
The Basic Bear.
I know. I may have to get a Basic Bear just because it's Android and it looks like the new cheap iPhone.
Well, we don't know it looks like the new cheap iPhone.
That's true.
We're still about 100% sure that it's a cheap iPhone. There's an actual cheap iPhone.
So let's just say that this is true, that this is the new cheap iPhone. How much are they going to sell for? Like $399, $499? I mean, it has to be like cheaper.
You mean unsubsidized?
Correct. Yeah, so I'm sure that on contract it'll be free.
You think?
Yeah. Yep. Well, see, they've got this problem of differentiation. Apple does by doing their last year's model for the cheaper price or free, because now you look at their line and they've got the 4, the 4S and the 5 that are pretty compelling. I mean, the 4 you could kind of say for free. I don't know. I'll go the 99 for the 4S. Right, but when that 4S slides down into that free position and the 5 is 99 and then they've got the 5S or the 6 or whatever they're going to have there, then you get into a really weird dynamic where a lot of people say 4S is good enough. I'll just take that.
Right.
So I think what they're doing is they're going to slide this sucker in where the 4S would be. Mm-hmm. And this becomes their free offering. And then don't have that where people go, I don't want this cheap plastic thing. I want the premium thing. So I'm going to pay the 99 for the 5.
I don't know. I was at, I was at, Lori and I went to a movie last night at the Uptown. Uptown had a very nice, had that, the new Apple video. I don't want to say it's an ad. It's their sort of Kool-Aid thing about inventing joy and built in California thing. Mm-hmm. And here, it talks about focus on this and focus, and getting really good at one thing. And I'm trying to weigh that against this concept of, okay, so now we're going to make a cheap iPhone. I don't know. It still doesn't sit well with me that Apple is, if it's true, they are actually going to market a cheap iPhone. It just doesn't sit well with me.
Okay.
Well,
I think they're going to do it, but not for this market. They're going to do it for foreign markets. And of course, they'll bleed back in on eBay and other places. But they have to do this kind of thing for India and China, where you don't have that subsidized iPhone price and it's, $500-$600.
I would agree. I think they've got to be in the space. I think they've got to have something for the low end. No question.
I just think that. Anyway,
so Phil, you piqued my interest. What movie did you see?
Oh, we went to see Way Way Back, the new Steve Carell, Toni Collette, Allison Janney movie.
Oh,
sort of a coming of age thing with.
It's only playing at the Uptown.
It is now, yeah. But
was it good?
Yes, it was very good. It was very good. It was very similar to sort of a similar vibe as and people involved in A Little Miss Sunshine way back. And what was really interesting is Steve Carell plays a real dick. He's just an asshole.
Huh.
So not the funny haha Steve Carell.
Right.
But it was really well done and a good show. I give it a thumbs up.
Do you do?
That's there you good. Go.
Yeah. Do you want me to give it stars, tomatoes, balloons? What do you want me to give it?
Tomatoes would be fine.
Thumbs up is good enough.
I think it's a 4 out of 5. So.
Okay.
Yep. Could use a little editing on the front end.
Oh.
Simply because they spent a little bit too much time establishing Steve Carell as a dick.
Okay.
So anyway.
Funny.
It's time, ladies and gentlemen. You know it, you love it. You can't live without it.
Steve's security tip of the week.
This is the mother of all security tips.
It is.
Right here.
It's how to secure your email. Steve, take it away.
This is the mother of all? Okay, the mother of all. So are you concerned about your email being in the open? That your major email provider may be and probably is enabling the NSA to scoop up all your email and read it. Yep. Then consider either an independent email provider or encrypting your email. So
I wonder what Eddie Snowden, you know, that whistleblower guy,
Eddie Snowden, or
traitor, depending on your point of view.
On your point of view. Okay, so
I wonder what he would use.
Well, as it turns out, Tim, thank you. Edward Snowden, the NSA whistleblower, has been using LavaBit, according to one article. And LavaBit is a very, very interesting, in some cases free, because you can actually get a gig of storage and you can send emails up to 60 with a 64 meg attachment, which is huge. And it's got incredible feature list, you know, spam filters and blacklisting and all kinds of stuff and secure email storage and so on and so forth. But more importantly, you don't have this going through, you know, a service where every time you start to write an email, it begins to save it on Gmail, for example, or Outlook.com, and all those things are stored open and in the clear. So if there is, in fact, scooping up of everything, vacuuming up of everything, the NSA can then have it all. But these guys secure it with elliptical curve cryptography with 512 bits of security, which is like way, way, way beyond the absolute top security that any government in the world uses. So it's very, very significant. So that's the one thing that is real simple to do and simple to sign up for and simple to do free, frankly.
And I was just looking at the LavaBit site. Interesting that to get the 64 meg of message size for the personal account for free, you agree to advertising.
Yeah, they stick a little
is
thing
that
in the
target mess. Is that targeted advertising?
No, it's just they throw it out. No, it's not. Okay. It's just it's usually some generic stupid thing.
Because if it's if it's targeted advertising, then it's like, hey, wait a minute, something's scanning my email.
Yeah, no, it's not targeted at all. And we'll have links in the show notes to all this. But then if you primarily use Gmail to Gmail, like in our company, we use Google Apps, and there are some people that I want to send secure stuff to and have them send secure stuff to me, then there's something called Secure Gmail. And it's actually a plugin that you use, an extension for Chrome, and you can have your email, you can compose a secure email and it encrypts it, 256-bit encryption. So that's cool. And there's also a Lifehacker article on it.
Open source, too.
Yes. And the one that...
Bruise the source at GitHub.
Exactly. And the one thing that I haven't really worked on, but I'm kind of leaning toward, is Mailvelope.
Mailvelope?
Mailvelope works with most major email providers. And it's considered an envelope for emails. So it's basically, and it uses open PGP encryption, and it will encrypt your email. And, you know, again, a lot of people, especially family members, you know, will push back on me and say, yeah, but, you know, I'll come back to the fact that what do you have to hide? I'd say, okay, well then if you don't have anything to hide, is it okay if I stop over and open up your mailbox and open up all your mail and look at it? Is that okay?
I'd say it's all right with me. There's nothing in there, I guarantee you.
God. Anyway.
You want to get some yard service? Maybe get some coupons.
There you go. There you go. Can I come over and look in your drawers then? Because you don't have anything to hide, do you?
Hey, little mister.
Hey. So anyway, so these are some great options if you want to know that if you send an email to somebody, they're the only ones that are going to read it.
So if you have encrypted Gmail, how do they target ads to you?
Well, they don't. Not on that particular email because it's encrypted.
That's right.
So now most emails you're not going to even care about, right? If you're going back and forth with a client or you're talking about photos you took or whatever, you might not care about that. But if you're sending a username and password to a secure new web app to somebody else via Gmail, or if you're using Melvelope and you want to send it to them at outlook.com from Gmail, then it's encrypted. Because the one thing that most people don't realize is that email goes through what's called relay servers. So it'll bounce through sometimes, you know, two, three, half a dozen servers as it makes its way across the internet. Well, anybody that runs one of those relay servers can easily run a man in the middle of an attack. And they can say everything that comes through that comes from 3M.com, you know, MMM.com, take and put into this folder and make a copy and put it into this folder. And so you can actually have someone other than the government grabbing your emails by doing keyword searching as they come across. Now, that doesn't really work very well unless you're at the origin or close to the origin, because obviously these packets get split up. But it is possible to run a man in the middle attack on email relays. And so, so you don't know who could potentially be reading your email, not just the NSA. So that's my tip of the week.
Ladies and gentlemen, the security tip of the week, Steve. So what do we got coming up in the next week or so? One thing that I did notice is...
I know. I'm madly putting this into the... to the show notes now, but Mini Demo is next
Mini
Thursday.
Mini Demo is Thursday.
Thursday, yes. Yep. Thank God we got tickets, right?
I didn't.
Oh, no.
You didn't?
No, neither round. I was out of the office when you sent your helpful email, Phil, and by the time I got the Eventbrite app up on my phone, and they had sold out. So then the second batch went up, and right at 2 when my thing went off, I went to there, and they only had the wait list. Which they still have. They still have wait lists.
Yeah. Okay.
And I have not heard anything from them. So
we should just sponsor them so we can.
So it is likely that I won't go unless someone gives me $100 and I can pay them their thing.
There you go.
We'll figure out a way.
Their $100.
We'll be on the $100 deal. We'll be on the hunt for a ticket for you.
Yeah. No, I was going to go, but, you know, if I can't go, you know, whatever. Oh, I got funny story. I got that email they sent out where they said that the second batch was going to be coming out at 2 a.m.
Yeah.
So I just said, okay, screw them. I'm not going to go. I'm not going to get up at 2 o'clock in the morning to get a stinking ticket. And then they sent the thing out. Oh, we're sorry. It's actually
2 p.m.
What were we thinking? Like, oh no. Okay.
That's funny. Felt
bad. Good thing I didn't put that very toxic tweet out there, you know?
Yeah, no kidding.
Are you kidding me? Screw you, Mini Demo.
Yeah, we would have been embarrassed for you.
Well, but there's the day before, on Wednesday, there's that Magnet 360 thing with Jeremiah Ouyang.
You're right.
This is always good. He was, when did we meet with him last? It had to be 5 years ago, wasn't it?
No, it wasn't. No. It was late 2011. He was at General Mills. Or the fall of 2011.
I met him at Guy Kawasaki's in Guy Kawasaki's backyard.
Well, la di da.
It was crazy. That was a crazy time, let me tell you. But I'm sitting there and I say, "Hey, Jeremiah, how you doing?" He looks at me like, "Who are you?" He gets it all the time though, as the conversation went. So, but he was very gracious in that social situation. Of course, I was pouring wine for him, so you know everyone's gracious in that situation.
Boy, I have to totally change, Phil. We did the podcast episode 33 with Jeremiah in April of 2009.
See, that's what I thought.
God,
I know.
Wow.
Could it really be that long ago? Oh my God. Wow. Anyway.
Yep.
Anyway. Yep. So that's coming up on Thursday. And then, of course, mini demo. I mean, on Wednesday. And then mini demos on Thursday. And then Drupal Camp starts on Thursday, too. Ooh,
well, Drupal and this camp. One, I will tell you that this one looks like a really good camp. We will have a link, obviously, in the show notes, but go out and take a look at it. If you have any interest in Drupal, you know, you can go as a newbie. Some of the sessions, obviously, or most of the sessions will be over your head, but if you have an interest in it, it's a great place to go and you know, kind of hear a state of Drupal and what's happening and so forth. Okay. Should be a good event.
Yeah.
And then the Rot Racer prototype. This was Graham put this in there. This is about that race car, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Which looks kind of fun. And then the Life Science Lean-In, the Mini Analytics Forum, is going to be at Optum in Eden Prairie.
So this whole phrase lean-in, what is this lean-in thing? Why is this?
Oh, this is
everybody saying lean in. You get your MSNBC saying lean in. You get your, or is that CNBC? I can't remember. Everybody's leaning in now.
It's because of Sheryl Sandberg, who's the COO of Facebook. She wrote that book called Lean In. And it was about rather than sit back, you know, the metaphor is rather than sit around a conference table and lean back and fold your arms, instead lean in. In other words, pay attention and lean in to be active and be engaged in all of that. So that's kind of where the meme started, was with her and her book.
You know, for years, you know, if I'm near a wall or a tree, I'll be doing some leaning.
There you go.
Get it?
I do.
That's my version of Steve Borsch's subtle
humor. Phil, what am I going to do with you?
So I think we can take from that, Phil, that you lean different.
There you go. Yeah. See? There you go.
Lean in.
Phil Wilson, lean different.
Lean mean, lean in. Come on, Eileen. It's all sorts of stuff. So,
yeah.
Anyway.
And then all the way to October, still the Cybersecurity Summit. If you have an interest, get signed up.
There you go.
Hey, there's going to be some good stuff in August, but I don't have a date yet. Which I'll stick in here, obviously, probably next week or whatever. But the there's one of the main guys from Raspberry Pi in the UK that'll be at the Hackerspace. So,
oh, really?
That'll
be a good one.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I got my first two Pis last week. And
you did?
Playing around with them. I got an A and a B just to see what the difference was. And actually, the A is not bad. I mean, you know, I thought the performance would be a problem, but it's really not bad. So.
Yeah.
I would still get a B because it's only $10 and you get an extra USB and Ethernet, which is worth it for sure for $10. But I'm having fun with it. And it can run all sorts of crazy distros of Linux.
So when I was gone, I just want to mention this too. When I was gone, I was poking around Facebook and here was a post by Ben Edwards on July 2nd that he says, so I guess I should come clean. You've likely seen posts about getting rid of stuff or selling our house. It's true. Jenna and I are moving to Washington, D.C.
Wow.
The move's partly for his work at SmartThings, because, you know, they were actually Physical Graph Corp was actually set up in Reston, Virginia. But, you know, he's wanted to be, you know, living in other places in his life and all of that. But, you know, they've already got a place out in D.C. and that's where he's going to be. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with the development group back here. You know, how vibrant is the Twin Cities going to stay at, you know, for SmartThings?
Oh, I think it'll be okay.
Yeah, probably.
It'll be okay.
Let's hope.
It'll be all right. You know, you still have places, companies like Spark and, you know, there's a very active Arduino and Raspberry Pi.
Right.
A culture here. And I think we'll be fine. We'll be fine.
Yeah.
We'll make it.
Yep. And then very he's cool. Passing the baton on Ministar and so that's in great hands. And so yeah, it'll be good.
Wow.
I know. Big changes. Wow.
Big changes afoot. Well, with that, we'll look forward to what happens in the next week and we'll talk about it next week on
the Minivate Gang podcast. Take care.
Thank you. Yeah. Maybe Graham will be.
Maybe.